This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good morning to SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We've got the AFC and the NFC championship games are set. But that's not the only thing we've got. Tonight, Clemson, LSU at the Superdome in New Orleans. And you know what's interesting? Both teams are like 14-0. Both teams have been in the top five all season. You know, LSU has the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in Joe Burrow. They went on the road and beat Alabama. Dabo has got a team that's the defending national champs. They went undefeated, too. They've won 29 straight games. But you know what both want so desperately before going into this game? Just from the media perspective, what they want before, you know, obviously they want the trophy, but what they want is they want the underdog label. Both teams are desperately playing the nobody thinks we'll win or everybody, stop. Not everybody's rooting against us. No. I think the opposite. I think people are rooting for a good game. I think if you're not a Clemson fan, you're not an LSU fan, you don't wave those towels or wave those flags. I think you just want a really good game between two really good teams with two really good quarterbacks with two really good coaches and let the chips fall where they may. If Clemson emerges, great. If LSU emerges, great. We might have our own little biases like, hey, you know, I'm kind of leaning towards LSU because I like the SEC even though I don't root for the Tigers. Or, you know, Clemson's had one of those years where it's nice to see a kind of a new dynasty in college football. Whatever it is, maybe you like Dabo, maybe you don't. Maybe you like Ed Orgeron, maybe you don't. Maybe you like Joe Burrow, whatever. It's one of those games where, for whatever reason, it feels like both teams want to just grab onto the nobody believes in us card, which is a little weird given that they're 14-0 and everybody seems to believe in them. I think it's more or less that there is an underdog aspect. One of the teams is going to be written a little bit differently by the media. Maybe Clemson's schedule was too soft. Or maybe LSU has never faced a defensive line like Clemson this season. Whatever it is. Both are kind of grabbing onto it a little bit. I think tonight's going to be an epic. I think it's going to be a classic. If I come back here tomorrow and it isn't, I'll be more than happy to pay penance. But I think it's going to go down in one of the greater championship games college football has ever presented us. And they've given us a couple. But I think tonight could be a real epic battle between two very good quarterbacks. Very good quarterbacks. And I haven't really figured out which way this game is going. More on that, and of course, what happens Saturday and Sunday next, SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. And your thoughts on this weekend. Love the games? Not like the games? Were you bored because none of them went into overtime? I mean, you look at the scores, right? Look at the end result, right? It was 17 points, 49ers. It was 16 points by Tennessee, 20 points by Kansas City, and only 5 points in the Green Bay Seattle game. None of the games went into overtime. For the most part, the games weren't as close, even if the score indicated that it might have been, right? You know, the Titans had a good, comfortable lead going into the fourth quarter. San Francisco dominated the trenches against Minnesota. I mean, really did. And Kansas City, of course, blew out Houston. Once Houston was up 24-0, Kansas City rolled on to a 20-point victory. The only game that had really any sort of interesting aspects late was the Green Bay-Seattle game when Seattle came back into this game and Aaron Rodgers needed to make some third-down conversions and did. Devontae Adams had such an amazing game yesterday, just amazing. But he had one great throw and catch on third down late in Seattle territory that's one of the highlights of the weekend. It was just a perfect throw by Aaron Rodgers that landed right inside the arms of Devontae Adams at 160 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. It was incredible. But nevertheless, that was pretty much the closest game. But look, you can view games, whether they're close going to overtime, or what the larger picture is. The larger picture is we got some really entertaining games this weekend.
Yeah. Let me just back up for a second. It's amazing to me how accurate Vegas gets these things.
Yeah,
too.
It is true. That is true.
Because all week long, you know, we kept saying, it's like, yeah, you know, we can kind of see this going chalk. We can see San Francisco winning big. We can see, you know, what we thought. I mean, obviously Vegas struck out with the Ravens and Titans game. But we thought, you know, hey, Ravens probably going to win big. Chiefs did end up winning big. Niners ended up winning big. But that Seahawks-Packers game, we had no clue what to expect.
Right.
And,
right.
I mean, we just, it was.
It was a 4-point favorite, I believe.
It literally was flip a coin. And which way do you want to go? Because we can make an argument for the Seahawks. We can make an argument for the Packers. And even, you know, a lot of people started leaning more towards the Packers because it was going to be cold. It's, you know, really snowy and stuff. But Seattle, they deal with cold weather. They were able to hang in there the entire time.
I saw a report where the fans stayed at Lambeau Field even after the game. Like, the players were gone. It was just snowing, and I think people were just soaking it all in and just really enjoying the Lambeau
moment.
Why not?
They own the stadium.
Yeah, why not? It's theirs.
It's their team.
Yeah, their team. What was this I kept hearing over the weekend that they were asking people to show up and shovel for $12 an hour?
Well,
pretty
no,
awesome.
Actually,
they do that a lot.
I think at first they were asking for volunteers.
Oh, and then they started paying?
Yeah.
It seemed controversial, but I hear this story all the time when it snows there.
Well, you know, and I
there
think
were like
about
people
this
arguing on it on Twitter, and I'm like, I'm not following it. I was just kind of following it on the periphery, but I'm like, doesn't this happen all the time when it snows there? They say people show up and people show up with shovels.
Well, see, what I love about this is that when you start hearing people complain, it's like they forget, like, you know, no, the owners are the people. It was
right.
Almost like, hey, owners, come out and shovel your team.
Well, who pays them the $12 now? The Packers? Or can the city pay for it? Because does the city own the stadium?
Is it Bob's Bakery? Because he has one more stake or one more shareholder
right.
than the rest of them.
Exactly. So the Packers as an entity, I mean, as the group, as the shareholders, do they all just get together? Does the city do it? Just have see people volunteer. Look, give gear out. You know,
such
just say, look, show
team.
Up. We'll give you a jacket. We'll give you a Packers jacket.
Give you a cheese head.
Right. That's awesome. It's great. We always talk about 32 owners. Well, there's 31 owners. Then there's the Packers.
Or there's like 180. I'm not really sure how the numbers break down.
Exactly. So the Packers advance. They'll play San Francisco. That did go chalk. 49ers, man, they ran the ball great. They really dominated defensively on that line of scrimmage, right? They kept Minnesota in check. The offensive line for San Francisco did a great job, too, opening up holes, ran the ball. There was one drive they had. They didn't even throw. They just ran
well,
the ball
like
all
was,
eight plays.
It felt like it was a reminder of to the rest of the country. Like, hey, you know, the Niners, this is how we got here, you know, on the back of our defense.
Right.
Because the Vikings couldn't do anything. I mean, at one point, I think I was looking at it like in the fourth quarter, Dalvin Cook had maybe 20 yards.
Yeah, he didn't have he had, I think he finished with 18 total.
Yeah, I mean, that was dominating to keep him contained.
And so now you've got a Minnesota situation that's kind of in flux because, you know, remember Mike Zimmer was up for the Cowboys gig and he didn't get it. And now you've got Kevin Stefanski is now the new head coach of the Browns. Okay, let me just say this. Matt LaFleur has done a great job in Green Bay. Mike Vrabel's done a great job at Tennessee. Right? Kyle Shanahan's obviously worked out. So I'm not going to go down the road of, well, I don't have no idea this is a bad hire because we don't know
Cliff
very
Kingsbury,
much about it. Cliff Kingsbury.
Showing promise.
Showing promise. So you never know where your next great head coach comes from. So you should always hold out hope when your team hires a guy that maybe initially you're like, wow, really? Wow. The problem where I understand this from a Cleveland perspective is they've gone down this road way too many times to start resetting the emotions, right? Mike Pettin, right? It's Rod Chudzinski, right? I mean, they've gone down this road. Hugh Jackson, now Freddie Kitchens. They've gone down this road so many times with guys. They're like, okay, let's hold out hope. He knows what he's doing at the head coaching level and will be good. If I'm a Browns fan, I really wanted big. I wanted gigantic. I don't care what that gigantic is. I wanted Josh McDaniels. I want Urban Meyer. I don't care. Go out and get them. But the Browns as an institution, what we're hearing is Josh McDaniels flew out there and said, look, I'm going to be the head coach. I bring in my own guys. And they wanted Paul DePodesta to bring in the guys. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what I'm hearing. And I'm like, If that's the case, you're screwing this up in terms of your opportunity of landing big fish. Do you want a head coach who just follows along with the front office game plan that's not working? Or do you want a guy that goes, I'm in charge of all of this football stuff?
There were two other things that I heard with this hire, too. One was that Stefanski was, he lost out to Freddie Kitchens last year.
Right. So they knew a little bit of him, right. But still,
right. You lost out to
the guy that was one of the biggest busts of the college football hires from last season.
The other thing I heard was that the Haslam, the owner of the Browns, is wanting Stefanski to turn in a game plan on Friday.
And
be prepared Friday afternoon for a Friday meeting to go over said game plan for Sunday's game.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Does that feel like if you're a head coach, that's something that you would want to do is turn in the game plan 2 days ahead of time when...
Not really.
Because coaching to me, I mean, that's something you have. If you're going to be a successful coach, you have to do it in game.
See, isn't this kind of like, and I don't know how like high-end restaurants work, but don't owners, like if I own a high-end restaurant, right? Wine, all that stuff, fancy, fancy restaurant. Don't I hire a chef and say, do what you do. Create your dishes. Put it on the menu. Do all that. And let me see what the bottom line is. And if we have to talk about certain things that aren't selling or certain prices of certain things, we'll do that. But you don't have to turn into me every idea that you have. You're a chef, for crying out loud. I am not a chef. So you do what you do. Isn't that what the way this is supposed to work? Whereas he's supposed to just run the team. He's supposed to just do his job. If the wins and losses pile up, and then you start evaluating his level of competence in that category. But you don't micromanage. Right? Let him coach. Let him do his thing. Let him adjust. Let him meet with his people. Put out the best product you possibly can. See, this is why nobody wants to go there. I'm sure Josh McDaniels was like in the meeting going, hey, can you just get me the plane right now? We're gone. I'm not doing this. I'm not staying here. Let's get out of here. If you're not going to let me bring in my own people, like, let me bring in my own guys. I'm hiring the offensive coordinator. I'm hiring the defensive coordinator. I am not by any chance am I taking the suggestion of your front office. I'm doing it my way. God. I completely get it when the Cleveland Brown fans are going, look, could he be a great coach? Sure. You know, let's hold out hope. But my God, I've been burned by that thought process so many times. I want to be burned by it again. I just done. So there you go. You got your coach, Stefanski, Minnesota Vikings, who's only worked for the Minnesota Vikings. So I'm sure that's going to be great. I'm sure his tentacles will expand all around the NFL to help bring a winning team to Cleveland. With that roster, you better not screw that up. Again, you're almost wanting to get a rebuilding kind of situation in your first head coaching job instead of, hey, we got all these tools. You better turn in something. Like Matt LaFleur, remember we talked about it over the summer when Matt LaFleur was going to Green Bay? It's like, man, what a tough gig that's got to be. You are inheriting a car that you are supposed to take to the finish line. You are not inheriting a car where you're just like, finish the race, and then we'll work on the engine, and then we'll fix some other things and rebuild the chassis. But, you know, just take it to the finish line anytime you can. No, you're supposed to finish, like, first. We're in the top three right away. That's what he's going to have to do. I don't know. Good, bad, and dumb coming up. We'll get more on the games, including the Green Bay and Seattle game. We'll talk more a little bit about that. But what does this weekend hold for the AFC with the Titans and the Chiefs? What's one key there? We'll get that. Oh, as well as Clemson LSU tonight. Boy, there's a lot of football going on. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. One big takeaway from the weekend of the Baltimore Ravens-Tennessee Titans game. I'm telling you, this is one of the reasons why the NFL is so great. Is that you? Because of the nature of the sport in terms of its competitiveness, about how really the difference between the top team and the bottom team is all not that much. Different personnel can come in, change the aspect of it, direction of your team. Here are the Tennessee Titans, one win away, one other road victory from going to the Super Bowl in a season where they felt like, man, everything is falling apart again. I can tell you, living in Nashville, that this turnaround by this Titans was not really caught on by the Titan public until probably mid to late November, when they're really starting to figure out maybe this team is halfway decent. But nobody looked at this team and said, well, they're Patriots good, they're Ravens good, they're Kansas City good, right? Because they didn't even know if they were going to make the playoffs. So this is catching the city not by total surprise. I don't want to paint the impression that the whole city's like, oh my God, we're in the AFC title game. Because it's been a momentum building sort of thing. But remember, every week they've gone into the games, the last couple of weeks, they've gone into the games not knowing what the outcome was going to be. Are we going to beat Houston to get to the postseason? Okay, Houston's resting its starters. Yes. Okay, but now we got to play the Patriots. Patriots are a very good team. We've never won at Gillette Stadium. Let's go out there and see what happens. Oh, we beat the Patriots? Oh, great. But now we've got the Ravens and their unbelievable offense and their unbelievable MVP quarterback. Well, you know, we'll see. But, you know, it's been a good season so far. Oh, my goodness gracious. Look at what we just did there. It's been piling on. It's not been like Kansas City. It's not been like even Baltimore going in, where there was a comfortability of their season where, all right, let me just wait to see how this plays out. Possibly a Super Bowl, maybe an AFC title game. Let's wait until the future's over there. For the Titans, it really has been a week by week thing because of the battle to get that sixth seed. Steelers had it pretty comfortably until they started to fall apart late in the season and not winning games, losing to the Bills, losing to the Jets, right? But in the end, it's been something that, you know, as the games have progressed and the Titans look better and better, and the formula seems to be there, right? Run the ball, control the clock, make no mistakes, right? Those are we all get in drilled to that as NFL fans. When the NFL was this sort of pass-happy fun league a year ago, where everybody was throwing the ball 50 times and everybody was, you know, looking ahead to scoring 48 points a game and whatever it was in terms of the change of offense, you always remembered that in the end, this was a winning formula still, that you could still win games by creating opportunities on defense, by running the ball, keeping the other team off the field. The Titans did two of those three. They ran the ball great with Derrick Henry, of course. They capitalized on all these defensive opportunities, stopping on fourth down, intercepting Lamar Jackson's, etc. But the one thing they didn't do was control time of possession. They lost that. The Ravens had over 500 yards of offense in one time of possession, scored 12 points. They were in the Tennessee zone, the Tennessee territory, 8 times in the game and got 12 points. Tell me how in the world a game like that formulates multiple times over and over and over again. It doesn't. That outcome does not come if you play that game exactly the same way in terms of statistics, not actual results, but statistics. You don't get Tennessee winning by 16 points if you promised the Ravens eight territorial drives in Titans territory, time of possession, and over 500 yards of offense. Right? Harbaugh takes those statistics every time. Not dominate time of possession, but win time of possession. Right, we're going to have 500 yards of offense. We'll be in the Titans' territory 8 times. The one aspect that throws everything into Tennessee's favor is the fourth down stops and the 3 turnovers, and the fact that they can't stop Derrick Henry. But even then, Derrick Henry could have done what they did, right? And the Titans could have scored as many points as they did, 28. But the Ravens still should have scored more than 28 points with all of those statistics in their favor. But drives got stopped. Fourth downs didn't get converted. Interceptions were had. Right? It's one of those games where opportunities are there to win. You take them. It's what Houston didn't do in their game against Kansas City. You're up 21-0. You have the ball. It's 4th-and-1. Momentum's all yours. Do you go for it to try to keep a drive alive? You know, I know it's early, so it's, you know, it doesn't come with a kill the clock mentality. I'm not trying to get into that, but keep Chiefs off the field. Keep the drive alive. Maybe you score a touchdown. Maybe you got to kick a field goal. But do you go for it on 4th-and-1? No, we'll kick a field goal. Fine. Okay, kick a field goal. But now here comes Kansas City. Now you're playing preventive. I can't lose this. I had it all. Now I'm losing it. What was that locker room like? What was that locker room like for Houston? To go in there going, we were up 24-0 and we're down 28-24. That must have drove them nuts to watch that evaporate in one quarter.
Would you have any fire
coming out?
No, I mean just like that, you're sitting in the locker room at halftime.
I would be deflated.
24. I mean, even as a coach, you would be sitting there racking your brain trying to figure out what just happened.
I would be deflated because I'd be smart enough to understand that we got to make some defensive adjustments because Travis Kelce's killing us and Patrick Mahomes is finding his guys and they're not dropping passes. The opportunities that we took advantage of in the game are not there anymore. They're not fumbling the football. They're not turning it over on special teams. We're not blocking punts because they're not punting. That was how Kansas City solved its block punt problem.
Yep.
That's it. We won't punt again. Okay. We'll have the punter not punt. Yeah.
6 straight touchdown scoring drives.
Right. So
after that was after the muffed punt.
Right. The punter kicked. Dustin Colquitt kicked 3 times in the game. One of them was blocked. That was it. So they're like, all right, fine. You know, we won't give you that opportunity again. We'll just continue to roll along. So I don't know how to do it. Like, I don't know. If I'm up 24-0 and I'm up 25-4 based on unique circumstances, getting a special teams block for a touchdown, getting a special teams fumble recovery and turning that into a touchdown, right? Getting a blown coverage. The first touchdown was a mistake on defense. That was Kenny Stills that caught that 54-yard touchdown pass. That wasn't he beat a defender. That was a complete and utter miscommunication by Kansas City's defense that allowed him to be that wide open. Okay, well, guess what? They're not doing that again, right? They're going to make sure, all right, wait a minute, we made a mistake. Guys missed their cues. Whatever. Nope, we're not doing that again. And then once Kansas City went, and by the way, we're not dropping any passes anymore, and we're not turning the ball over anymore, that was it for scoring opportunities for Houston. Until they got one in the late in the third quarter when Deshaun Watson ran in that touchdown. After that, and you know what stunk? That became a 10-point game going into the fourth quarter. All right, cool. And Kansas City scored on the next possession. Kansas City got the ball back after Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson scored with, what, like 20-something seconds left to go in the third? Okay, Kansas City gets the ball after that, and they march down the field and score a touchdown in like 4 plays. And guess what? Now a 10-point game going into the fourth quarter turns into another 17-point lead. They had a field goal at the end. They win by 20, and that was it. Houston can't come back. God, I wonder what that flight home must have been just how in the world did that occur? How in the world did that occur?
Yeah, I mean, this is something you and I, we watch a ton of football. Yeah. I'm not saying that these guys don't either, but we watch a ton. I'm still trying to figure out how do you not take control of the game a little bit? Or how do you not slow down? How do you not bring it back to you?
Well,
when you're up 24-0, I understand giving up a touchdown or maybe 2, but when it's 24-14, you got to figure out a way to, like, okay, we got to slow this train down.
We've got to figure out a way. Yeah, we're up 24-0. Like, they're going to make a move, right? They're not going to make mistakes all game.
Yeah, we're not getting a shutout. It's only the first quarter.
So what do we do when they score? What? Just complete collapse. Just couldn't do anything. And then that when that field goal, when that, I mean, I'm sorry, that when that punt, when they faked that punt and it got stopped, I was like, Darren, that's it. They're not going to have the end of this.
You knew it was over then.
That's it. That's it. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we kick off the week. Oh, we got a lot A lot of good Bad in the Dumb from the weekend. Next, SB Nation AM.
SB Nation AM continues now on SB Nation Radio. Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is a Monday. That means good, the bad, and the dumb. We had a weekend of information. You know what, though? I wasn't part of good, the bad, and the dumb on Friday.
Well, there was no good, the bad, the dumb on Friday.
Oh, well, that means you've had 3 days.
Yep. But I'm glad
of
that
material
you mentioned,
to get for.
I'm glad that you mentioned that there was no good, the bad, the dumb on Friday, because I had a great one on Friday that I held just for you.
Wonderful. Let's do it.
We have an early contender for video of the year.
Okay.
Or video of the decade, really. Because, it is a new decade, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Canadian Family Feud came in really strong and put up this viral video. Take a listen.
All right, no team has reached 300 points, which means we're going to sudden death. Give me Logan. Give me Eve. All right. Real simple. There's one question. Only one answer. Whoever gets it, you're playing for $10,000. That's it. Whoever guesses this wins the game. Here we go. Name Popeye's favorite food.
Chicken.
Show me chicken.
Spinach, Jerry.
That's great. That's great.
And obviously, spinach was the right answer.
Right. Yeah. Chicken.
Now, you have to see the video of this, because she is all celebratory.
Oh, she thinks she landed it.
She landed it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the funny thing is, Canadian Family Feud, a lot of people were posting this to their own Twitter. It was like just random viewers. It's like, oh my God, you got to check this out. You got to check this out. Canadian Family Feud did one-upped all the people who posted that video, because they showed, it's about 3.5-4 minutes long of all the outtakes.
Oh, okay.
That
oh.
happened on that final round.
So
just those two going up, they had issues with every single question coming up. So when you watch the whole thing, that answer becomes even better, because you could tell they had like 3 questions before that one that they kept getting wrong.
Oh my God, that must have been great. I got to check that out.
So then when she finally went up there, I mean, she, you know, cute blonde girl. You know, she is shimmying all over the place when she says chicken. And then I think it's just like the realization when she looks over at her family, like, we got this. And she looks over at her family, like, what did you just do?
Oh, right. God. I always thought when I was a kid, I'd watch Family Feud and I would wonder if my family wouldn't just kill each other if we all screwed up. Like,
yeah.
If my sister sister was up there and they're like, name something that's red. And she's like, blue dress. And like, God.
If you watch the Canadian Family Feud video, because when you watch that, there are some things in there that are just outrageous.
That's great.
Like, one of them was, God, I can't remember, but the answer was so stupid. you left there like shaking your head, looking at the guy like, how did you even come up with that? And then you can kind of say, okay, he probably thought he meant this. Oh no, it was something. The question was, name something that you die on your body, or something like that, right? Name something
right.
on your body that you die,
like your hair, a t-shirt.
That would be number one. Right. The blonde girl, she hit the buzzer first. She couldn't come up with an answer, and I'm looking at her like, dude, I bet you dye your hair.
All right. Yeah.
And you can't think of that. And that guy goes, gunshot.
Oh, so he thought, how do you die?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. By the way, real quick, why is there a Canadian Family Feud? Why don't they just take what we do and just air it there?
Because, you know, if we don't do Eskimo moose questions.
Oh,
that's
I got
probably
it. Okay.
Profiling a little bit, but I'm pretty sure I'm right.
All right. So it's Canadian Family Feud because
yep.
it's, they want Canadian people there.
With Canadian dollars and a lot of stories.
I just didn't know if they just thought ours wasn't good enough, so they had to do it their way. And
we probably don't apologize enough.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it's true. That's a good point. Probably, and we don't like hockey. No. As much as a country.
No.
Some pockets I mean, we do, but a lot we don't.
I mean, if we had a hockey question on Family Feud, guaranteed maybe four answers max.
Yeah, exactly.
Then
exactly.
They would do the full eight.
All right, what is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day, you may disagree with me, but you probably do agree with me. I'm going to give it to David Baker, president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Because he made me cry not once, but twice this weekend.
Oh, I didn't need that. Oh, that's true.
So here's... This one might make you cry, Tony.
Jackson. Yeah, he is special. And you know, Bill, there's something else special here. Hey, who's this big fella?
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt here. Good to see you, Phil.
Good to see you, man.
You betcha. Sorry, man. I was trying to knock on a door back there, but you don't have a door.
Knock it down.
Knock it down. Hey, Coach, yes. For your viewers out there who don't know, I'm David Baker, president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And on behalf of all of those of us who love this game and the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it is my great
privilege. This isn't right that this is happening right now, but.
Okay, never mind.
No, please come back. Come back here, David.
Coach, I want to thank you for all you've done for the game, for all you're going to do for the game. And I want to welcome you to Canton, Ohio, where your bronze medal, your legacy. Yeah!
How about that, Bill?
Congratulations.
That's awesome. Yep. That is really awesome.
So he did that on Saturday live on, that would be CBS, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
Bill Cowher's on CBS. He did that live, brought out family. And, you know, the thing, I mean, just, you know, we're in the middle of watching football and David Baker's on TV making me cry.
Yeah.
I don't need that on my Saturday. And then,
no.
And then I'm sitting there Sunday, forgotten all about what I cried about on Saturday, just enjoying life.
Right.
And then this happens.
Pro Football Hall of Fame, David Baker, the president.
Kirk, good to see you, Kirk.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Kirk, how are you doing, sir?
Good. Hall of Famer.
Great to see you.
Hall of Famer.
Yeah,
Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer. Coach, on behalf of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and all those fans that are watching and all of us who love this game,
you do this.
Thank you, Coach, for all you've done for the game. Thank you for all you're going to do for the game. Thank you for the history that you've made and the lives that you've impacted. Thank you. It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th Hall of Famer.
How special was that?
That one was for this one was for Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, Jimmy Johnson. So Bill Cowher and Jimmy Johnson meeting, going to the Canton, Ohio.
Yeah.
Cowher, look, it's when you're a Steelers fan, you don't have a long list of coaches. To go, that's my favorite coach. Like
no,
every one of
three.
Them. I've had three in my lifetime, and they're all awesome. They're all special. Cowher, to me, will always have a different place. Noel, I kind of caught on to the Steelers kind of late in their dynasty and became a fan of them late. And the 80s weren't all that great. They had some really cool playoff wins in the 80s, but they didn't go to a Super Bowl. Cowher brought the Steelers back. Cowher in the early 90s, the Steelers were competitive again. The Steelers were in first place again. They had really good records like 12-4, 11-5, first place. They went to the Super Bowl where they lost to the Cowboys. They appeared in AFC championship games, losing to San Diego. They lost to the Patriots and they lost to the Denver Broncos. But they were competitive almost every year. There was a time in the late 90s they weren't, but Cowher's, you know, and then they finally won the Super Bowl beating Seattle in 2005. Yep. There was some lean times in the 80s where when the Steelers would have playoff victories or moments of like where you felt like the season was good, it always come back with that. And then they wouldn't have a good year. Then they'd be okay. Then, they'd be all right. And Cowher got them back into consistently winning double digit wins. Playing, you know, can't always go to the Super Bowl, but be there, go to the playoffs, get a chance.
Basically being a threat, not a walkover team.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to play the Steelers ever again.
Right, and they were tough. Like, they caught the Bills, like, early in this, in his run. They caught the Bills when the Bills were dominating the AFC.
Yep.
They lost to Joe Montana in a wild card round. They lost to the Chargers in a game they should have won. They lost to the Cowboys when Neil O'Donnell threw it away. But, you know, then they lost to the Patriots in a struggling year after Neil O'Donnell left. But I always liked Cowher. And Jimmy Johnson, my God, how could you not put Jimmy Johnson
in? Well,
I love it.
I thought he was already in. I mean, at least the hair was already in, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I was, you know, David Baker, shame on you.
That's great.
But though, think about this. How awesome is that gig?
That's a really good gig. That's a good gig.
I mean, when you watch these videos, he takes so much pride and pleasure. It got me to a point, it's like, you know what? I'm already crying. Let me go to YouTube. And I just started watching David Baker YouTube videos of him going and knocking on hotel rooms. You know, watched him tell Ray Lewis or Randy Moss gets me every single time. And he tells Randy Moss, and Randy Moss is just break down crying. You know, like a little kid just crying. And
but how do you not know your own level, though? It's not like winning Publishers Clearinghouse.
Yeah. I mean, I get
like Randy Moss didn't think that he was going to go to the Hall of Fame.
I get
did Randy Moss wake up in the morning and go, yeah, like did Randy Moss ever wake up and go, I don't think I have a chance.
Right.
Like Randy Moss probably woke up every day going, I'm one of the greatest receivers in the history of the game. That day is coming.
Put it to you this way. Peyton Manning knows he's going to get a knock on the door.
Yeah, of course.
Eli doesn't.
Right, right, right. If Eli does, you go, all right, gotcha.
And Eli, you can cry. Go ahead. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Eli gets a knock on the door. Peyton, yeah.
Peyton's like, all right, thanks. Good to see you. I was expecting you.
Yeah.
I was expecting you any
minute
now.
You're about 5 minutes late, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I didn't need that crying during the weekend, though.
All right, so then what's the dumb of the day?
Maybe that's dumb on me for nominating David Baker.
You're very emotional on that. That's very good.
You know what? I watched it, and then I showed it to my son. I'm like, watch this. I mean, this is amazing. It's amazing to see guys of that stature, you know, like someone like Bill Cowher, who has done it all, to just be so humbled and honored at that moment.
Well, you gotta remember too why it's a big deal. They're being put in something forever.
Yeah,
like that's the line every single time.
He said, you know, he said this to both of them. It's like your legacy will live forever in Canton.
Exactly.
And you just sit there like, oh my god, that's huge.
Like we can share memories of, hey, this guy did really good, or this guy did really great, or I remember this player. But when you're in Canton, that's permanent. Your memory and your legacy of what you did is now permanently there in the history of the league. Players come and go, coaches come and go. Those in the Hall of Fame last forever. So I can understand the emotion getting the best of them.
Well, I mean, like the movie Coco. He's able to cross over every single time now.
Yeah, exactly. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day is just, you know, it was real quick. Just this Vermont State Senator who wants to ban cell phone use to those under 21. Now, I get what he's trying to do. Right, but I mean, you know, but if you're caught with a cell phone under the age of 21, it's punishable by a year in jail and or $1,000 fine.
He needs to be permanently removed from some any sort of government entity. Yeah,
tell me
that's
this isn't
nonsense.
Footloose.
Yeah, completely footloose.
Right,
it's footloose. And by the way, this is America. If you want to have a cell phone, it's not a gun, for crying out loud. All right, my God, it's not alcohol.
I know,
it's a cellular telephone. Right?
I mean, I get the premise behind it. Yes, you know, it causes...
I don't get the premise behind it.
You're trying to cut down on teenagers using cell phones while driving.
Well, that's different than owning a physical cell phone.
Yeah, but isn't that more on the parents?
But hold on. You can make a law on that. What you're saying is the premise behind it. Make a law on that. Right. I can't. Yes. And I have a law in my state. I'm sure many people have laws in their state. That's different than saying anyone under 21, you can't own an item like that. We're going to treat it like some sort of banned item that you can't own. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You could probably,
because we don't have a culture anymore. All right, fine. We don't have a culture anymore. You don't pay phones. You can't find one anywhere. Around when I was a kid, in my little town in Kentuckook, New Hampshire, there was like four of them, right? If I needed to call my mother or I needed a ride or something, it was like four pay. I can't find a payphone anywhere anymore, right? Those are out of business. Why? Because everybody has cell phones. So unless you're going to tell me you're going to stock phones at every telephone pole so my kid can call when he needs a ride or he's stranded or whatever, then do it. Otherwise, we've changed society. Don't change it back. You can't put that genie back in the bottle. That's dumb. That's ridiculous. God, these people. Everything has to be a law. Everything has to be banned. Let's just protect ourselves. Let's do the best we possibly can. You're right. That is a dumb. But the good was good, and the sad, the crying was good. But that was very very dumb. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. This hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Since I was out Friday, Ron, I didn't get to talk about this little bit of news that made me happy going into the weekend, but Mike Leach is going to the SEC.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for SEC Media Days now.
Yes.
This is going to be the best. Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, Lane Kiffin. This is going to be great to listen to Mike Leach just talk about anything he wants at SEC Media Days, which is a circus and an event in and of itself. Is just worth the price of admission. Because I think, is no disrespect to the people who cover the Pac-12, you're great, but there isn't the circus crazy atmosphere at those that are SEC Media Days in Alabama.
No, and we're finally getting what we talked about a while ago. It was like, these guys need to have a reality show together.
Absolutely.
I mean, don't forget, you're forgetting Ed Orgeron.
Ed Orgeron. Oh, that's right. Ed Orgeron, too. Like, they should all be together. They should all be in a house somewhere.
Yes.
Voting each other out. Oh, God.
I mean, that would be fantastic.
The state of Mississippi has Mike Leach and Lane Kiffin as head coaches. You've got to be kidding me. How great is that? Well, I can't wait for the Egg Bowl. God, man, that's unreal. Unreal. Great news for the conference. Sad news for the Pac-12, because your source of entertainment and frivolity is now gone out of Pullman. But this is great for the Southeastern Conference. SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.